dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans. Welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs, SVCSportsZone.com, joined once again this week by Jeremy Ward. Jeremy, how you getting along? How's this good weather treating you?
Oh, today was fabulous. I got the opportunity to go down to the Reds game yesterday afternoon and sit in the sunshine and try to sweat a little bit, and it felt good. So I'm getting really excited for the 70-degree temperatures this week.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jeremy, in the inbox this week, a real big topic, maybe starting from some of the discussion we've had that started to branch off into some, a couple different things. It probably goes all the way back to an article that I had written several weeks ago now. I've kept it on the front page just because of this particular topic continuing to grow. The title was Seeing Sports Through Different Viewpoints, and I was just talking about different things that people may want out of today's high school culture with AAU and club volleyball, Legion baseball, those types of things, all the way down to Little League and junior high. Well, now it's started to talk about playing some two sports at one time at high schools and junior high level, and in the inbox this week, it even started to take on a little direction of maybe the future of high school sports. You know, in today's time with the pay-to-play and people traveling around and schools obviously and some budget issues with busing and uniforms and just all sorts of costs, I guess I wanted to start with your take. When you look at AAU, club sports, Legion baseball, and we know the school's perspective pretty well, but when you are a teacher coach, you're an official, you're a parent, I just wondered, is your overall view of this pretty much consistent, or as you change your role in life, do you kind of change your opinion on this topic?
Well, Shane, I think that's really an intriguing question. As I've gotten older and my kids have gotten older, and you are all of a sudden put on the other side of things, it really does help you draw on, you know, where kids are coming from, where the motivation comes from. A lot of times it is the external motivation. And I think as a coach, sometimes your perspective is your team, your family, your inner circle, you know, whatever it is you believe. And you're forced, if you're committed to your school and to your team, to think that way. And I think your perspective is going to be reflective of that. Whereas as a parent, your goal and your perspective is coming through how it benefits your child. And, you know, those can go together, but at the end of the day, just the eyes you have to look through, the perspective you have, it's going to differ. And I do think as I get older and as I start to see things evolve with all the club sports and all the AAU, it takes me back to when I was working on my master's. I actually sat on a panel and there were some guys from the NAIA, and they were doing this Champions of Character. And a guy came in and spoke from Houghton University, and he was saying that basically in 15 to 20 years that, you know, school sports would be dead. It's the only place, the United States, the only place in the world where athletics is tied to schools. Lots of schools are having financial issues, you know, and basically going on to say it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense from a business perspective. And as schools start to look at things that way, the whole community pride of playing for your school and putting on your collars and all that is going to be less and less important. And I'm not so sure that I buy into that. I think we live in an area that, you know, you just look at what we're able to do with the podcast, what you're able to do with the website, Shane, and the way people follow high school sports. And it's a lot deeper than just the name on the school. It's generations. It's the roots. It's really in the culture of the area, and I don't see that going away.
Well, I think you make a good point there, and I think it's intriguing from this standpoint. I think the reality of what you say about how important it is to people and how there's too much of love for it to ever die. But I do think there's another side of this. I guess I have to maybe get a further opinion from you on is the financial part of it. You know, as you look into administration, I know, for example, a couple of years ago in our Paint Valley program, I'll just use it as an example. I know we've spent a lot of time in the last 5 to 10 years saying, okay, let's look at the local Little League. What can we do to help them do what they're doing? And we've had some great leadership down there. And then as it comes into the junior high level, I'm speaking baseball here, junior high level, we've really been able to increase our numbers and get a lot of participation. Well, I know there for a while, there was even some principals locally at Paint Valley, and then across the SVC was taking a look at, is there a way that we could maybe move the junior high baseball season back about a month or so to allow junior high track to get in there, do some different things. And I guess a lot of the baseball coaches around the league were saying, well, why can't we have both? We have the club sport in place. Why can't the kids have that option to play baseball? But I think a lot of it comes from where the school support is, and I could see where the administration would be concerned about more and more sports growing. And I guess when I look at it from this standpoint, Dave Shoemaker, the varsity boys coach at Paint Valley, Dave and I have known each other for a long time. He has written a great article. I had a chance to read it earlier this week and had a great discussion with him the other day, and we've even talked about maybe putting together a round table here on SVC Sports Talk eventually where we get some different opinions of people who have been doing this a long time. But I guess I'll kind of start round table with you here, Jeremy, because one of the questions I would ask all of those people on the panel would be this. If you look back over the 15 years, be it Little League, Junior High, JV, Varsity, whatever level, and just talking school sports, if you look at the trend over the last 15 years, do you feel like the participation has definitely diminished? And if you look ahead in the next 15 years, do you think there is a concern about certain levels of certain programs being cut?
Well, I do think that is the case. I think participation has dwindled if you look at from Little Leagues all the way through the high school. I think people will point to two reasons for that, and whether it's true or not, I think the economy is one that comes back, especially when you look at sports like baseball and softball. They're expensive to play. There's a lot of travel involved, and I think that plays into it. And that's a lot of people have that argument. Yet at the same time, you see more and more club teams with high fees, and you kind of see it separating in the middle and going top heavy and bottoming out on the other end of it. And the other side of that, I think, is the whole move towards specialization, which I think is the root of, you know, of the article and of kind of this argument, if you will. Is specialization the way to go? And does that mean specialization season to season, or does that mean, you know, as a parent, as a kid, that you're going to decide one thing and you're going to, you know, when you're 12 years old, well, it's time to start, you know, making up your mind. And it's funny because, you know, I'll have that conversation with people. I hear it all the time. At what age does it quit being recreational, and do you have to be more serious, or does that happen? I mean,
right.
You know, I don't know. And coming from an upbringing where I was in a very rural county school and had pay to play when I was, a sophomore and junior, and had kids that I grew up with go to other schools because of the fear that they were going to cut sports. Right. And that had a big impact on, you know, my high school career. And, it's interesting because it seems like that was a trend. And you go back to that realm 15, 20 years ago, the school started to have some big time money issues, and that became the rallying cry to how to pass levies was, you know, we're going to cut sports. So I think it no matter how you look at it, it does in some way or form come back to finances. And I think maybe that's the way I would look at it.
Well, the word you use, specialization, there, I think that drives a lot of our discussion later in the show, and it kind of generates from last week's discussion. And fans, if you're new to this discussion, you can always go to the DBK website. You can go back to SVC Sports Talk, listen to last week's show, or really any show. I'd also encourage you to subscribe to the show. Let us know what you think in our inbox, admin1@svcsportzone.com. SVC Sports Zone's on Facebook and Twitter as well. You can even call in 740-569-3254 and let us know what you think on this. But this is a great topic. It's a topic that a lot of different people have a lot of different opinions on. I'm going to try to get that Dave Shoemaker article linked to the website. It's a great read. I think a lot of our sports fans will just appreciate his take. Someone who's been a coach, an athletic director, a teacher, taking some administration type of courses and stuff, just gives you a nice perspective on his take of high school sports. So I look forward to that. Look forward to talking about this more in the weeks to come. And then later in the show as well, we'll be talking about some of the specialization of some of our local athletes here in the SVC. So fans, stay with us for a great show. On the other side of the first break, we give our track fans, as promised, an early look at the SVC in 2013.
Just remember, you can get SVC Sports Zone updates throughout the week. Just follow us on Twitter at SVC Sports Zone.
Well, Jeremy, in the inbox here, a discussion around the area, I guess this relates to track in a way, cross country, maybe wrestling, maybe golf or some other sports that come to mind. But we briefly were able to talk about this last week and definitely wanted to get into some track discussion here in this beginning segment here of our sports breakdown. The talking team success versus using the success of some individuals in the postseason. And I guess the question is this. You as a fan, so forget being a coach for a second, forget being a former athlete, just you as a fan viewing sports, when you see track success, when you see a team make a track run compared to, say, one individual going to the state or maybe winning the state, or maybe it's not just track, maybe a cross-country runner does this or a wrestler does this in a certain weight class or a golfer does this. Do you associate just that individual at that point, or is it something that from a program standpoint that you kind of still associate to that program in terms of how they represent that program?
Well, I do think that it starts with the individual, and you know, when it comes down to it, whether it's media coverage or, you know, just, you know, people sitting around talking at the diner, the barbershop, whatever you want to say, you know, just that general conversation about how you're passing along information, it always starts with the individuals, and the individuals drive the team. And I do see the similarities, even though you've got kids in these sports that are considered individualized sports. If you have those special athletes and then you have the depth around them to actually put together a team, you know, you can really build your team around that athlete and really build a program and build success around those athletes. Whereas I'm not sure that it works quite as well the other way. So I don't know what sparks more interest in being good. And I know I've heard, like, football coaches, when they go and look for other jobs, kind of make mention of this. You know, what does everybody say? Well, you got to get kids out. Well, how do you get kids out? Well, you win. Well, how do you win unless you have kids out? So it goes in that cycle. And I think if you're looking, and I feel like, you know, as a fan, and I look at these kids, and they get all kinds of attention in the media, which is wonderful. But I always catch their team. It's not like I just know the individual and say, well, I know he goes to one of those schools. That school is definitely attached with him. So I think they maybe, you know, they carry the load for their whole team. But a lot of times, those special athletes build a program.
Well, I think you're right there because, for example, the ZT invite here this past week had just about all the SVC schools. In fact, I think it had all eight, had some bigger schools there as well. And when you look through the team competition, there's just certain SVC schools that just cannot, similar to the way they do in the SVC meet itself, they just can't compete all the way through. I know you'll hear wrestling coaches say, well, we did really well, but we couldn't put a wrestler in this many weight classes. Or in golf, you may have a great individual, but if you only have three kids, you couldn't even put a team score. So I think it's the makeup of the sport as well. Obviously, if a baseball team or a softball team goes and tries to start the game with seven, that's not allowed. So mm-hmm. it's I do think there's something to be said, big school, small school, in terms of how you kind of put your program on the map. I know when I look here at the Zane Trace invite, just to kind of give some fans some names to look forward to this year, Joanna Korn in hurdles and Goldsmith in the sprinting, Uniota girls, their depth of athletes. I see some of their relay teams doing really well. Jesse Prohl, Zane Trace in some distance. Obviously, the Uniota boys, some of their distance runners, you'll recognize Richter Edwards. Adina Boys, there's an example too, where Adina Boys maybe does not have the total numbers on the track roster, but they seem to do a nice job of putting three or four athletes together all the time to be successful in some relay. Obviously, Taylor Baker at Paint Valley is very well known, her dominant postseason performance. Zimmerman at Westfall in the high jump. Nate Newman at Zane Trace is a great leaper. Logan Chaney at Huntington in the pole vault. Even some kids that didn't win events. We know Hutton of Zane Trace, Stout of Paint Valley. We know we're going to hear those names throughout the year too. So I guess here's why I mentioned that, Jeremy, is if you move forward in track, it's I don't want to say impossible, but there's certain schools that just cannot put enough kids in enough events to successfully rack up enough points to win some of these bigger track meets or even an SVC track meet. So I guess if I ask you to play coach, and this is where it's so different from some of the sports we've coached, you know, when you start to look at a league versus a postseason, do you try to score the most points for your team? Does it mean something to you to finish fourth in the league instead of sixth? Or are you maybe at that point doing this individually in terms of where you put kids in a spot where they can be most successful and maybe winning the league to go to the league banquet or to make that special postseason run? How do you think you balance that as a track coach?
Well, I think, you know, kind of building off what we talked about earlier, I think if you have athletes that can compete, it might even be saying, well, hey, you know, I've got a kid that could be in the top three in the 100 meters or in the sprints, but if I look at these middle distances, I think that kid can win. Well, when you get that attention, if you've got athletes can get your program attention, then, you know, maybe especially if you've got a kid that's a freshman or sophomore, you can get two or three more kids out. Well, that can put you over the top. You know, just having two or three more athletes here and there can put you over the top. So I think really, you know, it'd be an interesting it's an interesting perspective because, yeah, it's nothing like, you know, maybe putting on your board that you have three or four goals like you would as a baseball coach, a basketball coach, whatever, where you could win the league or finish in the top half of the league, win tournament games, blah, blah, blah. It really all comes down to that end of the season with the conference meet and the tournament. So you really kind of have to have a plan together at the beginning of the season on how you're going to maximize your athletes and maximize the involvement of your athletes to have a little bit of success and get some attention for your team.
Well, the maximizing your talent or success is a part of a coach in any sport, and I couldn't agree more with your last point. That's why I wanted to get your perspective before I had thrown mine out there, because I truly believe this in these sports. I think the attention – you're already talking about sports that sometimes do not get the media coverage of other sports, fair or unfair. That's just the way it is.
Right.
But when you are able to have a kid do something really elite, obviously that's going to draw more attention to the program. And like you said earlier, the way you get more kids involved is to show some success. And I think some of these smaller schools that just simply cannot fill the roster and fill the events, and say the SVC, keep in mind track is one of those sports. You only have three division sport in Ohio, so a lot of your lower half enrollments in our league go to that D3 and can really have some success in the postseason. So I definitely think that all goes into the strategy. We're going to talk to a lot of track coaches throughout the year. Hope to hear some from fans throughout the track league as well. Let us know your thoughts on this and anything SVC track. Again, that's admin1@svcsportzone.com. Fans, we hope you stay with us a little longer as we now turn our attention to the Diamond, as SVC fans should be in for 14 really fun evenings in the next month. Baseball fans, obviously, been an exciting first week as we move into SVC play. I want to first look back over this first week in terms of scheduling, and I wanted to talk about some of the different things that go into that scheduling. Some teams playing more games, some going less games. Prom always plays a role during baseball season on a weekend. Some different things. If a school's drama program, something like that, falls on a Friday night, Saturday night, those can affect scheduling. Then obviously you're looking level of opponent, you're looking location. I guess I'll just throw my opinion out there first. Then Jeremy, I want to get yours, but I try in putting together a schedule along with my athletic director. I always want to try to play a variety of leagues. Already in the first week, I know we played TVC, Southern Hills League, both halves. We played SOC. Then we try to play some different locations. I think you try to get your kids out there. You know, a lot of those coaches are going to be voting at the all-district level. And if you have a kid good enough, maybe even an all-Ohio level. And then, you know, you're obviously trying to get as much experience early in the first week. I will throw this out there before I go to you, Jeremy. Our league in the SVC has pretty strict rules on rain. You know, if we're playing a league game on Monday night and it's rained out, they force you to cancel a Tuesday night non-league game and immediately make it up. So what happens is the SVC's kind of developed that reputation across the Southeast that a lot of people aren't thrilled to death about scheduling us on a Tuesday or Thursday night. So, again, that's why a lot of coaches, I kind of fall into this probably, will load up on that first week and try to get as many as you can in. And then you'll see that again later in the year before the tournament starts loading up there. I just, you know, you've been around baseball for a long time, player, coach, a fan. I just wanted to see your ideas on putting a schedule together, what you think's the best philosophy.
Well, I think you hit on some good points, Shane. You know, and this is a conversation that we had in basketball season, and I think a lot of the same things apply. You do have more versatility in baseball and softball in the spring. A lot of times baseball and softball coaches have a little more involvement with their athletic director in making their schedule. It's the one sport pretty much where you have more non-league games than you do have league games. And I think the state made a nice move last year when they went to allowing a doubleheader that first weekend of the season, because that allowed teams to, if they wanted to schedule their doubleheaders, they can maximize their dates with their doubleheaders and limit those midweek non-league games for conferences like the SVC that already have three conference matchups. So it helps out. You know, I noticed a lot of the schools were able to play heavy this first week, or some maybe heavy the last week of the season where there isn't a full slate of conference games. And, you know, I really like the idea of looking at your team and realizing, am I trying to showcase athletes and maybe get them out there, get them in different areas? Am I trying to prepare my team for a deep tournament run? You can look at that two ways. Number one, I'm going to play the best schedule I can to make sure we're prepared, or you can go get the best record you can get to make sure you get that top seed, because at the end of the day, your overall record has a lot to do with your seeding. And, you know, unless you're within a couple wins or losses, you know, who you play doesn't play quite as big a role in that tournament room, that drawing room, as maybe it should sometimes. So I think you really just have to look at what your goals are and try to create some balance there.
Jeremy, do you think the Southeast District would be benefit from maybe having some continuity across the board? I know we opened with a really, really good White Oak program this past week, and Coach Avaidu, I have an incredible amount of respect for. He and I were talking about this a little bit. You know, you'll get some leagues like the SVC Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You'll get some go Tuesday, Thursday. Some are just random all over the place. Would we benefit from possibly maybe getting together as a Southeast district and putting something together for softball and baseball to where leagues start to play on the same nights everywhere?
Well, I think that's an incredible concept. You just have so many hurdles in the way of that when you're talking about now, like, say, take a TVC Ohio or an SUAL where they only have 10 league games or 8 league games. How do you arrange that? I remember absolutely being livid when the TVC dropped to two divisions and only having 10 league games after we'd played 16 for so many years. Mm-hmm. And did the Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And of course we had to start Monday, Wednesday, Friday the first week and go through. But when they went to a Monday, Thursday, it put the coaches in a situation where all of a sudden you're going to bring a kid back on 2 days rest, maybe all year long. And mm-hmm. if you had the right kid and the right coach, you might have a kid that could pitch all 10 league games. Now, that wouldn't be a great way to handle a kid's arm, but it would tempt people to do it.
Sure.
And I just thought that was ridiculous. But, you know, they still do it. They still do it today. They play Monday, Thursday, and you'll see kids come back and throw, you know, 3 innings. Sometimes you'll see kids throw Monday, Thursday complete games. And I just... there's a lot of reasons why that'd be difficult when you have some fields that are, you know, just in fantastic condition, and you have other fields that you can't play if it's overcast. So there's a lot of roadblocks in that, but the idea of it, you know, would be nice.
Well, I wanted to stay with the theme, Jeremy, of pitching, and we're even going to include catcher here in a second. But let's jump ahead. You've got me thinking about something else I wanted to ask you about this week in terms of pitch count, with what you're talking about there with some of our great arms across the Southeast District, and obviously specifically in the SVC. When you coach, there's a lot of philosophies out there on pitch count. Some people look strictly at a number. Some people look at innings pitch. Some people look at stressful pitches. How many times, you know, were they pitching in trouble, out of jams? Just from a baseball perspective, how do you decide, or what do you think is best looked at when taking care of a kid's arm?
Well, unfortunately, you know, your best information comes after you've had a kid for 2 or 3 years and you understand how long it takes them to get loose, what they look like the second outing, what they look like in the field the next 2 nights. But I definitely think, you know, in general, that the distress, that stressful innings pitched, mm-hmm. is much more important than overall pinch count. You know, I think most guys would agree that you'd like to see guys stay between 14 to 16 pitches per inning. But, you know, say you start out the game and you have a 6-pitch inning, an 8-pitch inning, and then you have back-to-back 25-pitch innings. Well, your pitch count's not that high going into the fifth.
Right.
But you just pitch back-to-back stressful innings. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of times you don't know until you've had a kid for a while how they're going to react and what's too much. And, you know, it puts the coach in a tough spot. And you definitely want to err on the side of caution. But, yeah, that whole pitch count thing, you know, you'll see some guys that throw 80 pitches before they come into the game, and other guys that might only throw 25.
Right.
You know, I mean, I can remember it didn't take me any time to get loose, you know, 8, 9, 10, and then let me throw a couple, you know, live full speed and I'm ready to go. But I had other guys, especially when I was in college, that took forever to get loose. And I think, you know, just every kid's different. But bottom line is you're throwing 20 pitches an inning. You're putting a lot of stress on your arm and just the mental fatigue that goes along with that.
Well, I mentioned that because as I look across the SVC and baseball here, there's so many good arms. It seems like every team is 2, 3, 4 deep in their pitching staff with some really good pitchers. And I guess before we go into softball, I wanted to mention the other end of the battery, and that's the catcher position. One of my favorites in the league, as I mentioned on our preview show last week, is the Kazmierczak kid up at Westfall. I see where he signed to play at Muskingum. Fans, you can catch that on our SVC signings page, as well as all the other SVC players, that athletes that make their college decision. Jeremy, before we move on to softball, give me your take on just how important the catcher is. You know, you hear so much of a team ERA and what the catcher's ERA is in terms of handling a staff. Just your take on how valuable that position is, or are we maybe making too much of it? What's your opinion?
No, I don't. And when you switch to softball, the catcher probably is, plays a bigger role than what a shortstop does a lot of times. So I think the catcher's critical, and I don't think you see too many elite teams that are average at catcher. I think the elite teams have above average catching, and you know, they're the quarterback of your defense and control your pitching staff. And you know, if you've got a good catcher, it makes everything else a lot easier.
Well, I totally agree, and I think as the year goes on, we're going to talk about a lot of defensive catchers across the SVC. There's some really good ones there, so I look forward to that discussion. Well, fans, we'll definitely talk some more baseball in our extra innings, but first, let's shrink the diamond and talk some SVC softball.
Got something to get off your chest? Drop us an email to admin1@svcsportszone.com.
Well, Jeremy, I guess I'll just have you get us started here with softball before I get too specific. Let's just get your thoughts on the opening week as you're able to get out and watch some softball.
I was very encouraged, Shane. I got to catch a game every night, had the opportunity to watch three of our league teams in different settings. And, you know, even though it was a little bit chilly and, you know, had to bundle up there Monday through Wednesday for sure, I was really pleased by the performance, especially the veteran pitchers and the hitters, from Zane Trace, from Westfall, from Unioto. I really thought they looked confident, and that made it easier for the younger players on their team to kind of get their feet wet and ease into it a little bit. Defense was hit and miss, but that's to be expected, especially with the weather conditions. You know, when your hands are numb, it's awfully hard to throw a ball. But, you know, the other thing that I was surprised, I didn't see a lot of walks. And I don't know if that's just, you know, the pitchers being locked in. Of course, you know, a lot of those pitchers are throwing all winter long, but they're not throwing in those temperatures usually. It may have something to do with the hitters just being impatient because, you know, you're standing in the batter's box and you're cold and you're up there ready to hit, you're ready to hit and not messing around. And I did see a lot of people hitting early in the count, and I'm sure it's a little bit of combination of both, but you expect to see a little more walks in the early going, and I didn't see that in really any of the games I watched last week, so.
Well, I think that's the thing you get in softball, too. I know I went out and had a chance to scout a little bit baseball Thursday night, and in some of the non-league games, sometimes pitching staffs just you're searching for someone to throw it over the plate. And you're right, the temperature was really chilly, and I think that definitely plays a role on how the game is played. I wanted to get your take on something. I think when I really break down some of the rosters, and again, I want to let people know that we're still trying to collect rosters and schedules. Several are up at the respective school pages on the website. You can send those into the inbox. But, Jeremy, as I look over some of these rosters, and I was listening to you talk last week about these teams and how closely you think some of these teams are on paper going into the year, I think it really comes down to the balance in the lineup. So I wanted to ask you kind of a two-part question, because I know as a coach, a lot of times you try to maybe pick out that one person in an order that you're trying not to let beat you on that given night. But then there's also those teams where they're just so balanced 1 through 9, you can almost pitch yourself into trouble if you start pitching around certain people in the order. How important do you think the overall balance of the lineup is going to be in terms of eventually finding our softball champion in this year, in the 2013 race?
Well, I think that is. I think it plays a big role. And a lot of the reasons why I like Westfall so much is because of that balance. And balance is twofold to me. Number one, it's not just the fact that, you know, you go one through nine and everybody offers a legitimate threat at the plate. It's, you know, do you have a variety of types of hitters? Do you have a couple slappers? Do you have some righty lefties? You know, it seems like some teams just have the same kid up over and over and over again as they get to the bottom of the order. And that's one type of balance, just like there's no easy outs. But I saw a lot of versatility, and some of it was young to old. I saw a lot of interesting players that caught my eye this week, particularly, you know, some watching in person, but looking at the box scores and talking to some coaches, you know, Alexi Cooper at Southeastern, Taylor Wall at Paint Valley, Lanny Thompson from Zane Trace, Denise Arledge at Westfall, and Brooke Blevins at Uniota, kids that, you know, are offering some things that maybe with speed or maybe slapping or being able to hit from the left side to create some havoc and diversify their lineups. And those were just some names that stuck out to me because they weren't necessarily the people we talked about in the preview show or the people we think about.
Sure, yeah.
When we see those teams. And that kind of got me thinking on this whole balance question about how nice it is to have, because I know a few of these girls that I mentioned, you know, they'll slap a little bit, or just the you know, the fact that, you know, you think, oh, I just got past the middle of this order, or, oh, this is a two-hole hitter, I'm going to get this out. Then all of a sudden they're on base three times. And that leads into, you know, the other part of your question. What do you do to those big hitters? And we certainly have some of those in the league. And you do have to be careful. You know, I never want to let one person beat you. I don't want the best player on the other team to beat me. That's was always my philosophy. But you do have to be careful, like you were saying. You know, if you pitch around too much, you end up seeing them five times instead of three or four.
Well, and I think you almost took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I was going to say. There was the fact that I think what happens sometimes, and I know as a baseball coach, I try to get my pitchers to understand this. When you start, you know, what you think is a meaningless two out walk, if it brings two, three extra hitters to the plate, now all of a sudden you're seeing the heart of the order that many more times, and you're starting to have to go through those stressful innings that you talked about. And even though pitch count may not be as a thing in softball, that's a big deal. I do think there's fatigue and there's mental fatigue, and eventually you lose your spot or not hit your spots, and I think that can definitely hurt you. So I think from a balance perspective, you make a good point. And fans, yeah, we're going to take some questions for photo finish for our track segment. If you've listened to the show throughout the fall and winter, you know our two-minute drill, our fast break, so you know a little bit about this segment that we try to put in each week. This is our extra innings segment where we talk a little baseball and softball at the same time. So, Jeremy, we'll have you bat lead off with a softball answer. I will follow with a baseball answer. So without further delay, let's go to extra innings.
What from the opening week should people be paying more attention to and why?
On the softball side of things, I was really impressed by the list of non-league opponents of our SVC teams. You know, you see Wheelersburg popping up there, Portsmouth West, Valley, Eastern Brown, Logan Elm. Those are all top teams, district final teams, regional qualifying teams from last year. And, you know, that's just proof that, you know, the top teams in our league all the way down through are doing whatever they can to prepare for the SVC schedule.
Well, I think on the baseball side, I think that the overall just pitching in terms of depth of talent, you know, we obviously know about the Farmers, the Stone Rocks, the Thompsons, Heskets, Downs, all the way through. But, you know, we start to find out the depth of pitching that this league's going to have in terms of just really making for some great league matchups. You know, in the past, a lot of times you get down to the threes and fours and stuff, so you start to need 9-10 runs to win games. I don't know that that's going to be the case this year. So I think that the overall depth of talent, particularly in the pitching, is what jumped out and we need to be paying more attention to.
What from the opening week has people overreacting?
Well, sticking with my theme there, I think sometimes overall records, and I would even go with individual stats that catch your eye. Sometimes people overreact on that early on, either because teams are off to a hot start or maybe the opposite of that. Because you just don't know how teams are handling doubleheaders, second game of a doubleheader. Maybe they're trying to work some things out with their lineup. You never know what they're after. And then again, you got some teams that have only played a couple of games the first week, and you have others that have played seven. So I wouldn't pay too much mind to that. And I'd also really caution people to put too much into this first week of the SVC, as I think there's just a lot of new faces, and even teams with veteran presences, they are going to have a different look than I think what some expect. So I would hold out on judgment for a couple weeks.
Well, I think we're on the same track, softball and baseball here, Jeremy. When I look, I've heard people make comments with some of the league favorites like Piketon, Westfall, Uniota down toward the bottom with some struggling records. And I would even throw Edina in there. Edina is obviously a very proud program. They lose a doubleheader to a D2 Logan Elm school. They lose a one-run game to Miami Trace. I just think that sometimes you can overreact 3-4 games into the season. I think, like you said, you got to get your large sample size in there and let see how things are going to play out before you can really start to make judgments.
As the SBC begins the title chase this week, how many losses are you predicting will allow a team to be in it at the end?
At the end of the day, I really feel like two losses could still get you a title by yourself. Maybe three could get you a share. There's some really interesting matchups, and I think that's going to be the term that you might watch for this year in the softball league, is just the matchups. All teams are built a little bit differently, and they have their own strengths and weaknesses, and I think you're going to see some teams that are just going to struggle with other teams because of that. So, it's going to come down to consistency, but I still think two losses will get it.
My first reaction to this was three. Again, I go back to my pitching. I think there's so much talent out there across the league, even on some nights where you get a 2-2, or even if you have to go 2-1, I think you're going to get some really good pitching. Last year, you saw how the Athena team was able to stay at 2 while everyone else beat up on each other. I think what you could see this year is everybody beating up on each other. Obviously, there's certain teams out there, when they have certain people on the mound, they're going to be really tough to beat. But as rain and some other different things start to play a role in this, I think it could – 2's probably a good number, like you said, Jeremy, but I would be more apt to say 3 for baseball.
An email is recommending the name Have a Clue Blue for the umpiring segment and wants to know your number one problem with umpiring at the high school level.
Well, like I told Shane, I've got to be careful for this one because I can't throw the umpires, under the bus just because, they put the coats on and they cover their arms up. They're not like us basketball officials to get a show off. But in all seriousness, the positioning the base umpire, it drives me crazy. It leads to difficult angles, from leaving early, illegal pitches, appeals on the swing, and my favorite, batted balls hitting the player in the box that are not called foul. And these aren't the fault of the umpires. They stand where they're supposed to stand, and with two umpires, I think it's almost impossible to get those situations that I just described, to get them correct and to be consistent with them. But I don't see us adding an umpire anytime soon either.
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, to have a clue blue is great. I don't know that it beats the liar, liar, stripes on fire, but to have a clue blue, I really think we'll have that stick. And I'm glad you ended up throwing in there that it's not the umpire's fault, because I surely, after watching you officiate all winter, don't want to have you just bashing our spring umpires here. So I'm glad exactly. You threw that in there. But I guess the one thing I would throw in from a coach's perspective is there is really a mutual respect with coaches and umpires. And I know sometimes we joke about that, but there really is. And I think the same way they look for professionalism for us, we look for the same thing in return. And I think anytime you get an umpire that's not professional in their approach in terms of their pregame and then the way they do their job and then the way, after the game, I think that would probably be the thing that jumps out at me.
Well, Shane, real quick, just to kind of build off of that, you know, I think we've heard this, if you've been watching the Final Four, about showing up the official, and there's been a lot of comments about from the commentators and everything else regarding the basketball. But I think, and I just want your opinion on this, with an umpire, you know, it's a quieter setting. You kind of have to yell across the field a little bit more in baseball anyway. How important is it in baseball, you know, you talk about professionalism, to not show up the umpire?
Well, I think it's all in your delivery. I do think you have to pick and choose when and how you're going to talk to them. But I still think if it's done in a professional manner, that conversation can sometimes take place without as many people across the ballpark knowing that it's taking place. So I think you make a great point there. Yeah. Well, as we take a final look at the inbox, really some great stuff to talk about here. And I definitely I want to try to get to a couple emails that I think were just outstanding. I guess in a way it was a two-parter. It was talking about our multiple sport discussion again, and it was talking about how we were contradicting ourselves, and they're basically directing this at me, talking back to some of our past shows. So I guess that was the good thing about the email, for them to make this comment. They obviously listened to our show throughout all the seasons. But they were talking about how I was so hard on some of the numbers in terms of, you know, JV girls basketball and so forth. But now here I am last week talking about kids shouldn't play as many sports as possible. And I guess I'm looking at it. I'll go ahead and respond to that and let you jump in here, Jeremy. I guess the thing I was talking about was you have to be careful in terms of how you can balance things at one time. You know, if you play in 90% of the games or you only come to 90% of the practices, are you truly balancing it? And I guess that's where I'm coming from. I want to see kids play as many sports as possible by maybe picking a fall sport, a winter sport, a spring sport. If you still want to travel and do some summer stuff, that's great. But anytime they start overlapping or anytime you start trying to balance that track, softball, track, baseball type of thing, and you end up having conflicts, are you truly balancing it? And I guess that's where I was slow to jump on board with that philosophy. But to make the contradiction clear, when I talk about kids playing as many things as possible, I'm talking about per season. Does that make sense to you, Jeremy? What's your response to that?
Yeah, I do. And there is a difference. I mean, encouraging involvement through high school athletics across the board. I understand your point there. And I do think we look at the, you know, track baseball because that's specifically what we were talking about. But I mean, I suppose there could be a scenario in the spring, especially maybe with volleyball and another sport, whether it's a cross country or something. I do think that it still comes down to, you know, having some policies. It just can't be up to the coach and the parents and the players. There does need to be some sort of guidelines to go by, and the schools should have some sorts of guidelines. I mean, I still know that some schools, you know, take now in the springtime, you've got girls playing club volleyball. There are kids that play softball that play club volleyball. One's a school sport, one's not a school sport. Some places, that's not a big deal. Other places, that's an absolute no-no. But is that the policy of the school? Is that the policy of the coach? I mean, you know, then you get into the argument, and we may, I'd like to hear from people on this as well. One is a school sport. One has nothing to do with the school. So what's that, you know, how is that different from going out and riding your four-wheeler or going out hunting or doing anything else? And how restricted are you going to be? I mean, I was an assistant baseball coach my first year out of college with a guy that told the baseball players not to play pickup basketball. He wasn't
right.
He wasn't going to watch somebody, you know, sprain their ankle or, you know, break their thumb. And if he would catch you down at the courts playing, you know, he said, you can turn in your stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of different perspectives, but, you know, that's another aspect of this that I think comes into play. And it just really depends on, is there a policy in place, and, you know, how much are you leaving up to the kids and the parents and the coaches to decide?
Well, I think the administration has to be involved. I don't think there's any way around it. And I guess the only reason I say that is, what is the expectation? Is the expectation to always have a JV team, say, in softball, in baseball? And it's even coming this question in girls basketball now, as we talked about in the winter. And within that expectation, what kind of guidelines are we going to have as a school? Because what happens sometimes is, in order to get numbers up, maybe you do become a little bit more lenient. But at the JV level, are you going to just say, hey, guys, come to practice if you can, and hope you have nine show up on game night? Whereas if you're trying to run a program, I don't know that that works when you get to the varsity level. If you're going to truly treat I guess I'm being a little biased here maybe, but with spring sports, are we truly going to treat spring sports like we would football, like we would basketball, you know, like we would some of those higher profile sports? And I think that's where I come from. By no means am I trying to not encourage a kid to go help the track program. I guess I'm just saying, if you're going to be a softball player or a baseball player that's in the top nine, you're a varsity starter for your high school. There has to be some form of commitment there, I guess. And I know, Jeremy, we may not be 100% on the same page here, but I know that we kind of share some ideas. What would be your final comment on that before we take a look at a really interesting part of this email?
Right. Well, I think the what you're alluding to is, from if it works for everybody, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how much do you have to bend, and how much, like you said, you know, taking responsibility? And, you know, you can applaud kids as you applaud anybody for taking on as much responsibility as they can. But are they taking on that responsibility, you know, at the cost of the other? Because at that point in time, are you, like you said, are you taking that responsibility? Are you, you know, being noncommittal? Are you not committed to anything? So it is, you know, it's a nice topic. It's an interesting topic. And I hope we have more discussion in the inbox on this.
Well, the discussion continues here, you know, and at first I hesitated to do this, because in no way are we trying to, again, put kids associated with a sport or anything like that. But the more I read the email and I got to thinking about it, I think it's a great way to highlight some of our elite athletes. So please, fans, understand, in this next segment, we're not trying to just single out a kid in terms of singling them into one sport. It's actually kind of a compliment from the person who sent this email that they would be on this list to begin with. And the idea of this was, they had given us a list of players, student athletes across the SVC, and they were saying, we want to know what Shane and Jeremy think of the best sport for some of the elite athletes in the league. And one of the first names that jumped out at me here, Jeremy, was Elena Lytle of Huntington. She's an all-league athlete in multiple sports. And I got to thinking, you know, this is really interesting, because, you know, Elena's played a lot of softball growing up. She's done a lot of different things. She is one of the real good all-around softball players, be it defensively, hitter, pitcher. But then I started thinking volleyball a little bit, and I'm thinking, here's a kid in the first half of her high school career that's been pretty elite in terms of being considered as good as anybody at what she does, which is defend the back row. So I guess I would have to probably go volleyball. But again, she's a great example of how it's kind of a compliment just to be considered on this list from this particular emailer. I guess I'd go volleyball. What's your take on Elena Lytle?
Yeah, and I know we briefly discussed this, but we really didn't have a whole lot of conversation on the kids, especially. I do. That's exactly the way I looked at it. I was like, you know, tremendous softball player, and I've had the opportunity to watch her since she, you know, started playing, you know, at a high level, you know, all the way back to being 9, 10 years old, and just tremendous softball player all the way around, and really versatile in the things that she can do. But I think of how good she is at what she does on the volleyball floor, and it would be difficult for me to really say, hey, here's one of the best defensive players, volleyball players, period, in the area, and that not be her best sport.
Well, let me throw this out here, because I think it's important, not just in her, but all of these athletes that we're going to be talking about here over the next 10 minutes or so. The idea of, as an athlete gets older, a lot of times this gap can maybe close. You know, if a kid has performed at a really high level as a freshman, sophomore, you almost wonder how much better can you get at something in terms of accomplishments, whereas they're only going to get better and better and better at some other things. I think that could definitely play a factor there as well. Let me go to another one here, and I think you'll see a pattern start to form. Lacey Stanforth, one of the great female athletes in the SVC, out of Paint Valley, a member of varsity volleyball, all-league basketball player, solid softball player who also in the spring does some pole vaulting for the Lady Cats on their track team. Just a phenomenal athlete. And Lacey's someone I've known for a long time. One of the favorite kids I've had a chance to coach. And, you know, I don't know. This one's tough. I mean, obviously, basketball-wise, she's continued to get better and better and better, has an all-league junior season. I think in softball, sometimes when you do not pitch, I know she had to pitch some in Aaron Riley's injury season last year, but I think Lacey's probably more of a middle infielder, top-of-the-order type of kid that does things athletically. I think you can make an argument there. But again, if you're going to the accomplishments, you almost look to what she's been able to accomplish in pole vaulting in terms of where she's going to end up in history at Paint Valley, and then as well as her accomplishments in the SVC, as well as district to regional level. That kind of makes you think there a little bit. How would you balance a kid that's just really good at a lot of different things, Jeremy?
Well, that's another good example, and I think this ties into a lot of our discussion throughout the show. A lot of times in the team sports, you can be defined or you can be viewed based on your relation with the team. You know, what part did you play on your teams? Did you make your teams better? And a lot of times if you don't play on good teams, maybe you stand out a little bit more than you would even if you don't have any more skill as somebody else that does the same thing that's surrounded by a lot of talent. But when you look at an individual sport and an individual number or time or height or distance, what have you, that is a lot harder to dispute. So I think, you know, when there's an option like this with the track and with the pole vault, it's kind of right there in front of you, and it's hard to debate. Whereas with the team sports, it is. So I'd probably lean that way.
Well, Jeremy, we're getting ready to run out of time a little bit this week, but I want to get to one more. Let's go ahead and get a boy here, and then we'll open this discussion up maybe for future shows as well, because I'm really intrigued by the email, and I think it's a great way to highlight some of our great all-around athletes. Let's go with Isaac Brapson of Piketon so that we can be fair here and get a boy in the discussion. I tell you, when I think of Isaac, it goes to this team success you're talking about, because the first thing I think of is just winner. You know, right. Here's a kid that, you know, regional in baseball, league champion in basketball with tournament runs, and obviously the football team, the playoff man, and here's a kid that is in the middle of all that. So, again, I don't know that I get caught up in saying this is his best thing or this is his worst thing. I think you could argue that if you take him off all of those teams, definitely those teams suffer. I think that, you know, a lot of times because of the quarterback position, people might lead that way. But I'll tell you what, you take him off the baseball team and they would fill it. You take him off the basketball team, they would fill it.
Absolutely.
So I think sometimes your position or your role on a team definitely helps there. In closing this week, Jeremy, your take on Isaac Brapson.
Well, I think you made great points there. Any time that you have that much of an integral part on the success of three programs, it's really hard to imagine what they'd be like without him. And, you know, like I said, you know, maybe I tend to go with football, but I haven't got the opportunity to see him as much in baseball since I'm oftentimes on the softball side of things. But just knowing the role that he plays on each of those teams tells you a lot about what kind of kid he is and what kind of impact he's had at Piketon.
Fans, let us know here where you want us to go with this discussion. I was really intrigued by it. I mean, obviously, we don't have time to get through the entire email. Just looking at some of the names here, Reagan and Alex Stonerock, Alexis Overly, Bryce Arledge, Leah Pelfrey, Vickers at Huntington, Brian at Adina, Strahl's Ball over at Zane Trace. So, I mean, there's a lot of different names here that, you know, maybe if this is something the fans show in the inbox, that's something they enjoy, we'll try to continue to do it. I know it was a lot of fun just doing those particular kids. And I think really what it does more than anything is just highlights just how talented some of these great all-around athletes are in the SVC. So on that note, until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and all the wonderful people at DBK Media Services, and for my co-host Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.